What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Each week, Politalk dives straight into the tough questions, like who is actually stepping in to save people from sorcery, accusation, violence in Papua New Guinea?
So she was gasping for air inside the people in a group there, and then they accused her, like, you must be the sorceress.
To listen, search Politalk in your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Wendy Mockey. From editing First Nation stories to creating her own, she's become one of Australia's most exciting young authors. Jasmine McGaughey is a proud Torres Strait Islander and African-American writer and editor. She's the beloved co-author of tennis legend Ash Barty's Little Ash series, inspiring young readers right across the country. And her latest work, Moonlight and Dust, is a young adult fantasy novel that blends culture, identity, and magic in a way only she can. Jasmine brings a powerful cross-cultural perspective to Australian literature, and her voice is fast becoming one to watch. Jasmine McGaughey, welcome to Stories from the Pacific.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's step it back to where it all began. I am wondering, when did your love of books begin?
I have to really credit my mum for this. She's a teacher, so I guess it was always important for her that I was reading and enjoying reading. And so we did a lot of reading at bedtime, and it was always fun books, books that I got to choose, books, especially when I was little, with characters that looked like me. You can find that a little bit more easily in picture books and things like that. We also made our own books together, and, you know, I would dictate and she would write it out, and then I would illustrate it and she'd bind it all up in a ribbon. And it made me find joy in writing and reading from a very early age.
Oh my God, that is so beautiful. Do you have any of these books that you guys created?
She might. Aww. She might have some of. I'll have to have a look, or, you know, through those boxes that are usually kept under the bed somewhere.
That is so, so special and just so cute. Yeah. Now, what's one of the first books you recall reading as a child?
One of the first books I remember reading by myself was the Del Toro Quest series by Emily Rutter, and she's an Australian author, and these little fantasy books for young readers, and they were just, it was excellent. There was a character named Jasmine, and so I was, you know, interested because it felt like, you know, someone like me maybe, and I just devoured them. It was this huge, huge series, and I think they still teach them sometimes in primary schools to this day, so they've been around for a while.
Yeah, amazing. And you mentioned how creating books was a thing that your mother and yourself did. It sounds like your mum was someone very special to you sort of growing up and very impactful in the way that she raised you. Can you tell us a little bit about your mum?
Yeah, well, my mom is a big reader as well. And she got reading from her dad, her love for reading from her dad. And, you know, for so much of my life, we've just read the same books and we just swap books here and there. Less so now. I think I read a lot more romance than she likes to read. But she's also one of usually my first readers for my own writing, you know, to make sure that it's okay and things like that. Although I think she finds it a little bit weird to read something that I've written, you know, and you know, understand that it's me that's written it. And it's just it's a weird kind of cognitive dissonance, maybe.
Yeah, right. And I'm assuming she's obviously extremely proud of you and your career so far. And I can't imagine. My mom is quite the critic. So I'm.
Oh yeah, mom will be. She'll always be straight with me. So like, I have to be prepared if I'm giving her something of mine to read. But that's also why I give it to her. So.
Yes. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Now, can you remember what one of your first pieces of writing, what was that about that you published?
One of the very first published pieces was online. I don't remember what the call out was exactly, but it was about hair. And I was basically writing about like Afro hair or queer hair, as, you know, my Akka's language calls it. And I was just writing about my relationship to it and how it was something that you know, when it's out, makes me feel very seen, and you just walk through life maybe a little bit differently to people who don't have that type of hair.
And you know, and when you're not from those backgrounds or have those experiences, you don't realize how very little of it that we have, and in terms of representation.
Exactly. Even like trying to go to the hairdresser, hey,
this episode could be all about hair. I mean,
yeah, could it?
Now, you're the oldest of four siblings. Do any of your other siblings write?
Well, so they're all my siblings on my dad's side, and the one closest to me, they write, well, they are an illustrator. So we've worked on one book before together. And I think they're working on another one, but their name's Savvy Ross, and their art is over a few places and online and things like that.
Oh, okay. Shout out to the sibling.
Yeah.
And what's that working relationship like when you guys are collaborating, let's say, together?
That one time we worked on a book, we didn't actually get to work together, really. Because like the way it works, you know, the publisher will work with the writer, then the writer hands over the stuff to the publisher, and the publisher hands it to the illustrator. So it's, although the text and illustration works together in the book, you're not always necessarily working together behind the scenes, behind the book.
Now, and do you have any intentions to kind of link up again to potentially do something together in the future?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be cool. Yeah. We always talk about, you know, trying to do stuff together. So one day.
Yeah, one day. I love this. Yeah. Make it like a little family business. Wonderful. Has your Aka read your books?
Aka doesn't read books necessarily, but she's read my short pieces. So like short personal essays that I pop online, and I don't have too many short stories, but I think she's read some of them. And for one of my books where I needed help, you know, she sat down and I explained, and she read little bits and pieces to help me with getting the language spelt correctly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she's very creative in herself. She's a singer-songwriter, so... But books is not her world.
Wow. Wait, hold on. Your Aka is a singer-songwriter?
Yeah.
That is amazing. Does she still perform today? She's still sort of active in...
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And has some music out there, so yeah.
Oh, that's so beautiful. You come from a very creative family then, it sounds.
Yeah.
And are you all, do you find you're all very supportive in each other's different sort of creative outlets and...
Very, very. I mean, even if we weren't in the creative fields, we would be. I think we're a bit close.
Yeah, right. Do you remember, was there a specific age in which you kind of realized or confirmed within yourself that writing these stories that you've been writing is something that you actually would pursue professionally? Like what age, I guess, what was the turning point?
It was after I finished my undergrad. So I studied psychology and justice, and it was super interesting, but I didn't love it. So by the time I finished, I asked my mom, I was like, Mom, what should I do? And I was tossing up either doing teaching or writing and going back to do some study in either of those two areas. And Mom was like, do writing, Jazz. That's where your heart really lies. Just do that. And so I did. And so, so happy that I did.
And for Mom to know that that's where your heart sort of lies, yeah, and to encourage you to chase it. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, beautiful. Has your family, this is just, I'm just out of curiosity, have they ever kind of created like a review group for you for your work? Like a panel?
But I told them, I said, whoever finishes the book first, because other than my mum, none of them were real, you know, big readers.
Right.
And I said, whoever finishes it first can name a character in my next book if I get to have a next book.
Oh, yes. We love an incentive. Yes.
Yes. So my uncle here in Darwin finished it first, so he gets to name a character.
Oh, that is amazing. So my next question was actually going to be, will we see a family member as one of the characters in your next book? And will that be your uncle potential? No?
I don't think so. I'll keep it purely fiction, but he can name a character, can be a good character or a bad character. And yeah, we'll see. It's up to him.
It's up to him. All right. Amazing. Now, you're the proud author of the Ash Barty's Little Ash series. Ash Barty is a proud Indigenous woman and former world number one tennis champion. How did this huge deal? how did this collaboration come about for you?
It was like by luck and kind of chance. I was doing some editing for the publisher, and they knew that I had written before, done some writing, and they asked if I wanted to submit a sample, and I did. And they were just so lovely, and it kind of just fell into my lap when I got the email, because it was from someone else in the publishing house,
yeah.
From who I'd been dealing with, and I was like, "What?" I thought it was a scam, and I ignored it for a while until they were like, "Oh, could you reply? We're actually like on a time crunch." And yeah, I did. And it was real. So I'm very, very lucky with that. Right place, right time.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Now, and were you given creative freedom, or was Ash very hands-on with the storytelling? How did that process go?
I got to come up with the concept for each book, and then Ash and her team would go over it, have a look, see what they, you know, if they had any feedback and things like that. There were general things that they said that the books should be about, like friendship and sport and family. And so then after the synopsis was reviewed by them, I would write away, and then they would read it again and bring it back. So yeah, it was pretty hands-on. And I mean, you're dealing with somebody's like real life image. So I'm glad that they did give me their feedback early in the piece as well.
Yeah.
Before even writing.
Oh, what an honor as well to have that sort of kind of offered and bestowed upon you. I think that's incredible. Yeah. And what kind of reactions have you had from kids? Like, have you had any sort of funny or touching moments?
Some of my favorite have been probably during book week. There's always a little kid who might dress up as the character Little Ash, and dress up as what she might look like on the cover with a tennis racket and all of that kind of stuff. And my nephew, who was reading the book, and his mum was recording it, and you know, he was giggling along to some of the jokes, and I thought, oh, that's the best.
That is the best. Oh gosh, that just gives me, that makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah.
And I want to know, how important was it to weave, you know, identity, culture, or like resilience into a kid series? Like even in little ways, how important was it for you?
Because it's a balance, isn't it? Like, to not be too didactic, but mm-hmm. then to also be teaching the kids something. Or I just wanted to put on the page an experience that felt real, at least to me, and hopefully a few other readers. And so it was important. It's also a lot of responsibility, I think. Reading is so important for young people that, you know, we wanted to get it right. And so it wasn't just me who worked on this. There were lots of eyes, you know, editors and Ash and her team and things like that. So it was something we all felt was important from the get-go.
Yeah. And did you see any part of your own childhood reflected in Little Ash?
Definitely. I think that's what I drew on most, was just what life was like when I was a kid. Except I wasn't sporty, so I did have to kind of...
Yeah.
I took some tennis lessons, so...
Wait, you took some tennis lessons?
Yeah.
Oh, I am obsessed. How did you go with the tennis?
Really fun. Like, I loved it, but it was difficult. Like, yeah, not just difficult on my joints, but like, I just don't have that hand-eye coordination.
No, same. I'm in the, I'm not athletic in the slightest.
No, me neither.
But I love watching tennis. So it's a great sport to watch, but it's fascinating that you took up tennis lessons.
Yeah, I thought, why not? Just to know what the little character's going to be going through.
Oh, that's, I guess it also helps with the process of writing and, yeah, right.
Definitely.
Amazing. Thank you. And you have published some of your work, which included the Creole language. How was that received initially?
Yeah, so it wasn't in the Little Ash books. It was in my YA book called Moonlight and Dust. Mm-hmm. And I've had like a couple of reviews, mostly online, just with non-Indigenous people talking about how they can't understand the language of the Creole that I put in the book, which isn't a lot too. It's only a little bit, but I don't put English translations and I don't have a glossary in the book. And I mean, I did that purposefully so that it wasn't othering to my people, and so that it was seen as a norm. It is one of the like official national languages of Australia. So that was important to me, even though I have had a little bit of feedback that it's difficult for them to understand, some people to understand.
Interesting. Just on that, why then do you think it's important for you to use Creole in the books then?
So, when I was younger, I didn't read anything about a Torres Strait Islander, let alone something that had language that was unique to my place in the world and my people. And so while this is just a little bit, I hope it's just a step for some people to look at it and see, oh, okay, maybe one day they'll write a book with more language in it or entirely with language. So, yeah, that was my thinking anyway.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Wendy Mockey, and I'm speaking with Jasmine Mokoki. Tell us a little bit about Moonlight and Dust and how that came to be and what that means to you.
Yeah, so Moonlight and Dust is about a young girl called Zilla. She's been spending most of her time in Brisbane at a boarding school, but she's headed up to Cairns to go back to her family and spend her final year, year 12, in her hometown, basically. So she thinks she's going to spend her final year with her big sister Nick, but Nick has an accident that leaves her in a coma and Zilla has to kind of navigate year 12 alone. She also stumbles upon the party scene at her new school where kids are using this stuff called Moondust, and it gives them special superpowers for about 12 to 24 hours. And Zilla has to work out if it's a good thing, if it's a bad thing, and if it's connected to her sister Nick's accident.
I'm hooked. Look, just FYI for all the listeners, just so you all know, I actually purchased a copy this week, so I'm excited to go and read. So if you're listening, get yourself a copy, okay? Don't be slack. What impact do you hope young Indigenous readers will have by seeing their language in your books?
I hope it just, honestly, if one young Indigenous person reads the book and either sees themselves in it, I'll be happy. Or if they say, oh, this is not quite like me and my family, then I hope maybe it inspires them to write their own. So we have more out there, because we're not a monolith, and we're all so different, and we need lots out there for our own sakes and for mainstream or mainland Australia as well. And so that's what I hope that they get.
Beautiful. Thank you. Do you have any dream collaborations with other authors or illustrators or even public figures you want to kind of throw out there?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. I've never been asked that before.
We're manifesting right now.
Yeah, manifesting. It works sometimes.
It does.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to work with any other Indigenous author on, like, I love reading fantasy and stuff like that, so I'd love to work. A friend of mine actually has a young adult book called Forever and Ever, and it's coming out early next year. And we always talk about that we'd love to write a fantasy book together at some point, you know.
Oh, okay.
And maybe something like that. Her name's Alana Hunt.
Okay, so Alana, if you're listening.
Yeah. It's on the record now.
It's on the record. It's official. Now, let's pivot a little. I would like to know, what are you doing when you're not writing?
Yeah, so I work at a industry news source called Books and Publishing. So we write about bookish news basically each day. We have a newsletter that goes out each day. So that's what my day job is. And then I try and fit writing and sometimes some freelance editing around that.
Yeah, beautiful. What's your favorite part about meeting readers face to face? Has anyone ever surprised you with their reaction?
Yeah, so just like a few weeks ago, I was at the Canberra Writers Festival, and these past couple of festivals have been like the first festivals I've done since Moonlight and Dust came out. And I had this young reader, and she came up to me at the end of the event that she'd been listening to, and she had a copy of my book, and it was like damaged with water. It's like water had gotten into it. And she said, I read your book and I loved it, but it got damaged with water, so I bought another one for you to sign. And I was just like, what? Oh my gosh.
Aww.
So I knew that was just the sweetest thing, and it will stay with me forever.
That's so beautiful. Have you ever on your sort of trails of doing, because I know you're doing a bunch of writers' festivals, and has there been a writer or anybody sort of in the creative space that you've come across recently that you've been inspired by?
All the time, I think. Writers' festivals are one of the best places, you know, to be if you're a writer. In like, because you get to just catch up with other writers. Because it's otherwise it's a pretty like solitary job where you're just by yourself at your computer or desk. And so I did the Blue Mountain Writers Festival just after Canberra, and I got to do some school events with Jemana Abdu, who wrote Translations, and Nivo Sisson, who wrote The Pronoun Lowdown. Mm-hmm. And the three of us went around to different schools in the Blue Mountains talking to students, and it was so much fun. And it was just really nice to talk to young people with other authors about writing and publishing and things like that.
Yeah, excellent. What is it about the fantasy genre that you love, or that you're drawn to the most, I guess?
I guess as a kid, it was always like a bit of escapism. It's always fun, something away from the world. But I also think it's a wonderful genre to process and understand things that do happen in this world. Some people often like to say that fantasy tropes are usually very familiar to First Nations peoples, because we can understand what it's like to face invasion and erasure of culture, which is often used in fantasy and things like that. So there's lots of different levels of why I like the genre, I think.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. And thank you for breaking that down too, because I think you're absolutely right. I think it's also a way of being able to present those themes that may be a bit heavy or a bit, you know, nervous for some people to unpack. Yep. And using that as a vessel is a very, you know, an interesting way to be able to explore those themes and ideas. Yeah. What advice would you give to young Indigenous or POC writers dreaming of seeing their stories in print?
Firstly, write what you want instead of what you think people expect of you. You have to enjoy it. Write what you're reading. I mean, read beyond the genres that you love, but you do have to be reading if you're going to be a writer. And if you're under 18 and a writer, there are some opportunities out there, like competitions and stuff, that you might be able to find if you Google them. There's not too many, but there are some.
Yeah, beautiful. Now, looking ahead, how do you hope your work will inspire readers, both young and old?
Oh, I don't know. I hope it's just like a fun time for them, like a fun read.
Yeah,
rather than, I mean, of course, I hope it inspires them maybe to write their own stuff or just to read more. But yeah, I hope it's just kind of fun and a little bit of a learning experience, but something that's just enjoyable.
And if there was one, I guess, one lesson or something that our listeners can take away from your story, what would that be? What would you like to impart onto them?
That it's okay to chase that dream that you might have. Like, my concern when I didn't choose writing after finishing school was that I wasn't going to make any money. And there is not a lot of money in the arts. That's true.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, right. But there are ways to like navigate that. Like, you know, I work in the industry still, and it allows me to be closer to writing and things like that. I would write whether I'm publishing or not, I think. But, I think it's a huge barrier that young people in general don't understand can be overcome or, like, navigated around. Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time, and also just being able to talk about the importance of books and that it also should be fun as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's also very important to also highlight, particularly for, you know, Indigenous sort of writers and creatives, because I think sometimes we feel a sense of responsibility and all those things. We carry a lot of that with us. So it's good to, because both those things can exist, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Both those things. And like a lot of the time, people are asking us for maybe more traumatic stories. And while that's fine if you want to write, you know, about racism or things like that, you also don't have to. You can write you know, stories that are magical and that don't mention it at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think a part of our survival or resistance is the joy that we also that we also bring with us everywhere we go. It's that ability to laugh at ourselves. It's ability to laugh with each other, and also the ability to create magic or be magic. I think that's it.
That's the slogan right there. You can put that on a t-shirt.
All right, we're selling merch next time. We're selling merch. Jasmine, thank you so much for joining us on Stories from the Pacific. You are an inspiration and also a joy as well. And anyone who hasn't ordered or read your books, get onto it. What are you waiting for? Jasmine McGorky, thank you so much for joining me from Darwin. Thank you for writing the books we wished we had as kids, for showing a new generation that they are the main characters, and for reminding us all that our stories are worthy of the page.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Wendy Mockey. To hear more stories about unique and incredible people from the Pacific, just search for Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. This story was produced and hosted on the lands of the Yuggera and Turrbal people.